I would like to introduce our speaker today. My name is Keith Bradshaw. I'm the Hong Kong Bureau Chief for the New York Times, and I'll be your host today on behalf of the Foreign Correspondents Club Board of Governors. About a month ago, I saw a quote from our guest today in which he said that if the booksellers had been kidnapped from Hong Kong, then that would be a violation of one country, two systems. And I thought, it's very interesting that we have somebody from the Central Liaison Office speaking to the media. It would be terrific to have him here. And I asked the Foreign Ministry, and they kindly arranged for him to speak here today. Dr. Wang Zhenmian is the Dean of Tsinghua University Law School and a professor of law. He retains those titles while he's here, but he has been transferred down here for a tour since December as the Director General of the Department of Law of the Central Liaison Office, which represents the Chinese government here in Hong Kong. With that, I would like to introduce to you Dr. Wang to speak today. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Keith, for your very kind invitation and introduction. It's my honor to come back to work in Hong Kong. I spent 2 years in Hong Kong in early 1990s, studied in Hong Kong University Law Faculty. So 20 years later, I came back. I didn't expect Hong Kong issues, Hong Kong questions are so interesting. Every week you have a surprise. 2 years ago, I was invited by this great club to give a speech on the white paper. today, my topic is the rule of law, the China story, and its impact on the future of Hong Kong. as you know, the new Chinese government established in 1949 is no longer new anymore. Already 67 years. I think the history of new China can be divided into three stages. The first 30 years, from 1949 to 1979, China was a political China. Everything was politicalized. Law was nothing. The consequence, the outcome was Cultural Revolution, which was a political disaster. Economy almost collapsed. In 1979, the second 30 years, we experienced an economical China. So you can say the first 30 years is a rule of politics. Second 30 years is a rule of economy. Everything was economy. Now China is so much commercialized. The result is China became number two economy in the world. So the achievements are great. Not only Chinese people, but also the world benefit from Chinese growth. However, we didn't modernize the state governance. Connection between economy and the government and the powers are not legalized. So that caused a lot of corruption. This also endangered, you know, China's future if we don't change the management philosophy. So after Xi Jinping came to power 2012, I think China the next 30 years, a longer period of time, China entered into the third period as a rule of law. So from a rule of politics to a rule of economy, and then to rule of law. First 30 years, law was nothing. Second 30 years, law was something. Law became something. So in the next 30 years, we hope law might be everything, especially political, economic, social, you know, activities should be legalized. So in 2 years ago, 2014, the fourth plenum of the 18th CPC Central Committee passed a comprehensive rule of law decision. That's for the first time in the Communist Party history, you know, the Communist Party made a very comprehensive, detailed plan how to build rule of law in China. So this plan, I call it a scheme, was further detailed into 190 items of tasks to be implemented. Now, these tasks were already assigned to different state organs to implement. So today, I would like to highlight some of the main legal and judicial reforms which are underway in China. Number one, to strengthen constitutional enforcement. So rule of law means, firstly, rule of the constitution. You have to guarantee the full implementation of the constitution. As you know, in 1949, China made one interim constitution. Since then, from 1949 to 1982, China, 33 years, China made five constitutions. 33 years, five constitutions. Case, U.S., over 200 years, you have only one constitution. Very inefficient. How to explain this, you know, political legal phenomena? If a country always makes new constitutions, so that means there is no constitution at all. So why China always made a new constitution? Because the constitution regulates the behaviors of the government and the citizens. For the government, once the government feels uncomfortable, restricted by the constitution, they didn't bow to the constitution. On the other hand, they abolished the constitution, and they would make a new constitution which can make them comfortable. So that's why, you know, we made so many constitutions. But from 1982, this constitution came into force. Over 30 years, 34 years, China no longer makes new constitutions. So we uphold one constitution for over 30 years. This is a remarkable progress. That means the Communist Party and the Chinese authorities are willing to be regulated by a law, the constitution. This is a remarkable progress. I hope in the future, in the, you know, long time, you know, to come, we will uphold this constitution, because this constitution incorporates rule of law principle. For example, Article 5 of this constitution says all political parties, all state organs must abide by the law and the constitution. Any law-breaking activities shall be investigated and punished. So that including the Communist Party itself. So I think it is a good constitution. However, this constitution is not fully implemented. So that's why on 2012, December 4th, Xi Jinping made his very first open speech after he became the Party Secretary General in the Great Hall of the People. What his speech about? It's about the constitutional enforcement. So that shows his strong commitment to the constitution and to rule of law. So the rule of law scheme passed 2 years ago put constitutional enforcement as the top priority. So there are a lot of discussions now in Beijing, how to establish efficient, effective constitutional enforcement mechanism. For example, some people urge to establish a constitutional court to oversee, the constitutional activities. Some people suggest there should be a constitutional council, like the French model. French establish a conseil constitutionnel. I hope in the near future there will be a clear answer. In the next few years, I hope such an institution will be established. Number two, rule of law. You have to have sufficient and good laws. You have, if the law is bad, how can have good rule of law? 40 years ago, after the Cultural Revolution, there was only two laws in China, which is the constitution and the marriage law, the family law. So we had only two laws. Two laws governed the entire country for many years. So China could exist without a law for many years. So today, China has made 247 laws since 1979. But as you know, China is a civil law country. We rely on statutes, written laws, not cases. Based on my research, a complete rule of law mechanism system requires at least 1,000 statutes. I did research on this, but currently we have only 247. So you can see there is a long way to go. On the list of the National People's Congress and its standing committee, the laws to be made are over 120 laws awaiting to be made. However, the members of the standing committee of National People's Congress, China's top legislature, most of them are part-time job. So according to the rule of law scheme, in the next National People's Congress, there will be a substantially increased, full-time, congressman, in order to fulfill, lawmaking tasks. In order to raise the quality of the laws, currently all the draft laws must be publicized on the official website for public comments, opinions, and also any citizen can submit, proposal to make new laws. So the lawmaking process is more open than before. Number three, how to build a rule of law based government. to law enforcement. Before, you know, the government leaders thought law was made for lawyers, not for them. Not for them. They had nothing to do with law. If you speak to the Chinese party secretaries, provincial governors or city mayors, county government heads, they will, you know, tell you how much attention they paid to the documents, you know, official documents. They you know, spent a little time to study law. In my opinion, law is a license issued by the people to the government. So you have to, you know, exercise the executive powers exactly based on your license, which is law. So law has, you know, direct connection with the government. Before, it was two stories, the government and the law, separate. Now we try to combine the two stories into one story. The government must be law-based government, rules-based government. In order to achieve this goal, the State Council, the central government, requires, according to this scheme, all government agencies must enumerate their powers and functions according to law. There must be a list of your powers and functions, you know, based on law. And this list must be publicized. Let the people know how much power the police has, the finance department has. Every department, government department must have a list of their powers. You cannot exceed the legal boundaries. You cannot, you know, on the other hand, once a function and a power is put into your list, you must exercise your powers. Also, all government policies must accept legality review before they are fully adopted. In the policy-making process, there must be involvement from lawyers, legality review, you know, before the policy was formally adopted. Also, government actions must accept the judicial review. So last May, China, we revised the administrative litigation law, enlarged the scope of administrative litigation. So more and more, governmental executive activities now subject to judicial review. I know in Hong Kong we have a lot of discussion on judicial review, but in mainland China we enlarge, you know, the scope. So government behaviors must subject to, you know, judicial supervision. Number four, to guarantee judicial fairness, raise judicial credibility. In the past, once a case was filed into the court, the presiding judge would accept phone calls from the city mayors or party secretaries to interfere the case. According to the scheme, now any interferences from outside of the court must be recorded and must be publicized on newspaper. So the court is requested to make a record who interview, you know, your decision making. If you pay attention on Chinese media, you know, recently there are several cases are publicized. For example, Beijing City Bureau Chief, you know, called Beijing City Court to interfere our case, and he was publicized and also punished. So to fully guarantee judicial, you know, fairness, you must you know, guarantee the judges, the court can exercise the powers independently. Also, we are establishing unified judicial system. Before, Chinese courts are localized, controlled by local governments. So the judges are appointed by local Congress, they are paid by the local governments, so they have to take care of the local interest. So we call local judicial protectionism. Now, the court, all the courts in a province, like Guangdong province, all courts in Guangdong will be financed by Guangdong provincial government, no longer by Shenzhen city or local governments. And the judges will be nominated centrally, not by local mayor anymore, to centralize, you know, the judicial system, to divorce the judiciary from local governments and the local people's congress. Also, the Supreme Court, according to the scheme, established a circuit court to handle cross-region cases. The number one circuit court already established in Shenzhen. Access to justice. Before, it is very difficult to file a lawsuit in mainland China court. Now, according to the scheme, currently, if you go to a Chinese court to file a case, the court cannot refuse, cannot reject your application. They must accept. So to fully guarantee people's access to justice. So that increased a lot of workload to the courts. Also, the treatment for judges. The salaries for judges will be increased 50%. You know, compared with the civil servants, this is a huge increasement. A lot of, you know, people don't, you know, feel good because their civil servants, they don't pay the same. Before, the judges are just treated like civil servants, paid the same salary. Now, China increased 50% salaries for all judges in China. All judgments will be put online. As a law professor, you know, it's very difficult to find a judgment. According to the Constitution, the judgment should be open, you know, should be available to the public. But in reality, it's not easy to find a judgment. Today, if you, you know, go on the open the Supreme Court website, you can see all the judgments on the website. This also, you know, increased a lot of pressure on judges. Before, because the judgments are not available to the public, they could make grammar mistakes. Sometimes they even cite, you know, the laws which was abolished long time ago. So today, because it's open to the public, so the quality of the judgment, the fairness of judgment, substantially increased. To increase the judicial protection of human rights, to guarantee the litigation participants, the parties, right to know, right to make comments, right to defense and debate, right to make requests, and right to appeal. Another change on judicial system is to standardize the relationship between the court and the parties, the society. So before, the Chinese judges go to parties, you know, very easily. Today, it is strictly prohibited. Chinese people always tend to find the guanxi, you know, to settle everything, including their legal disputes. But today, you know, this is a very sensitive question. If you call a judge, even your classmates, your lawyer, if you call your classmate who is a judge to have meals, you know, this will be punished. So this is the judicial reform. Number five, to strengthen the entire population's rule of law awareness. All party and the government leaders, cadres are required to study law. before you know Chinese, you know, officials, a lot of them study MBA, EMBA to study business. But today, it is prohibited to study EMBA, MBA anymore. Because if they study MBA, EMBA, all their mind full of money. So that's why, you know, so much corruption. According to the plan, so law is required. You must study law. Also from a primary school, law courses will be taught. Starting from a primary school, secondary school. Number six, to strengthen the legal profession. 40 years ago, there was no lawyer in China at all. 1979, only 100 also people who claimed they are lawyers at that time. But today we have 300,000, you know, lawyers, excluding judges, prosecutors, private practice lawyers. You can see, you know, there is a very substantial increasement of lawyers. recently, the central authorities, including the Supreme Court, issued, you know, the measures how to protect the rights of the lawyers to guarantee the lawyers fully exercise their rights in court. you know, to strengthen foreign-related legal service to protect, you know, foreigners' interests in China. Number six, the CPC leadership and the rule of law. How to deal with the CPC leadership and the rule of law? According to the scheme, all leading cadres officials must cherish law with a heart of reverence. Keep firmly in mind that legal red line cannot be exceeded. Legal baseline may not be touched. They must take the lead in abiding by the constitution and the law. So required all the party officials must abide by the constitution and law. Any violation will be investigated. According to the scheme, the CPC is making efforts to raise the rule of law thinking of the party members and their ability to conduct affairs according to law. So that's, you know, my summary about, you know, the, so what China is going to do, or some already happens in mainland China on how to build rule of law. my next question is, so what impact if China builds rule of law, so what impact on the future of Hong Kong? I must say, even when rule of law was not established a long time ago, China already applied a legal approach in handling Hong Kong affairs. This can be evidenced in 1982. One country, two systems was formulated in early 1980s. The purpose is to achieve unification with Taiwan, Hong Kong, and Macau. At that time, you know, China was still run under the, I think, basically, rule of man, not yet rule of law. But in 1982, when China made the new constitution, which is the current constitution, Article 31 already constitutionalize one country, two systems in order to give constitutional protection of one country, two systems. Article 31 provides the state may establish special administrative regions when necessary. These systems to be instituted in special administrative regions shall be prescribed by law, enacted by National People's Congress in light of specific conditions. you know, the Chinese government at that time, you know, still recently in a conference, I said, you know, we not rule of law, we were rule of papers or rule of documents, rule of documents. Chairman Mao even said, you know, the commentary of the People's Daily can be enforced nationwide. So what's the use to make a law anymore? But people just read People's Daily to run the country. So you can see the media in China even played even important role in the West. We use media as a management, you know, mechanism for many years. But when the one country, two systems policy was formulated, people in Hong Kong raised the question, how to guarantee this policy can be fully implemented? So the answer is, we will constitutionalize and also legalize this policy in order to guarantee this policy will not be changed whenever the leadership changes or whenever the focus or attention of the leaders changes. So that's the first effort to legalize one country, two system. That's the 1982 constitution. Secondly, in 1984, when China and the UK reached agreement on Hong Kong's future, signed the Sino-British Joint Declaration, China specifies its policies towards Hong Kong. So one country, two systems were further expanded. According to the Joint Declaration, those basic policies will be stipulated in a basic law of Hong Kong Special Mixed Region in the PRC by the National People's Congress and will remain unchanged for 50 years. So that's international treaty, you know, guarantee. So from 1985 to 1990, 4 years and 8 months, China made the basic law. So the basic law is a fully legalized the one country, two system, provide a strong legal protection for Hong Kong SAR, high degree autonomy, and the Hong Kong people run Hong Kong. Today, when the rule of law scheme, the 190 items of tasks, finished, completed in mainland China. So what impact on Hong Kong's future? I think this will change the landscape in the mainland. For example, China will honor its commitments to fully implement one country, two systems under the basic law. So according to this scheme, actually the scheme has a paragraph about Hong Kong, how to run Hong Kong according to the rule of law principle. So the first measure is to make basic law enforcement mechanism more workable. People complained a lot in recent years. You know, the basic law is not fully implemented, both in Hong Kong and the mainland. Mainland people also complained. So we are doing research on this question, how to, for example, increase participation of the Hong Kong legal community when the National People's Congress Standing Committee interprets the basic law, to enlarge, you know, the opportunity for Hong Kong legal profession, you know, to enter into Chinese legal market. To further protect human rights and the lawful interests of the Hong Kong people in the mainland, to strengthen legal aid, legal and judicial assistance between Hong Kong and mainland China. So there are several, you know, very detailed, you know, plans, you know, how to fully implement the basic law. China is a normal country, like many other countries. We have many, you know, good points. We also have many shortcomings. So far, human being never established rule of law in a country with almost 4 billion people. If you look at the rule of law in other countries, like the US, UK, when they build the rule of law, the population was very small. Today, when we draft a law, I participate in many law drafting process, we had to consider the needs of 1.4 billion people. In the US, you need only consider 300 million people. Very diverse. You had to consider the very complicated social conditions. Not so many people like rule of law. Not many countries in the world achieve rule of law. If you did research on the, 205 countries of the UN, I think, you know, many countries, you know, didn't succeed in building rule of law. So it's very challenging. It's more difficult than develop economy, than political campaigns. The Chinese President Xi Jinping said, rule of law is not human nature. You know, human nature is the rule of man. People always tend to apply rule of law to others, not to themselves. They want to apply rule of man to themselves. But the Chinese Communist Party and the Chinese government are determined, you know, to build a rule of law country. In my opinion, this is the third nation building effort in China. The first nation building effort was by Chairman Mao to build a political China, build the political infrastructure in 1950s, 60s. The second nation building was by Deng Xiaoping to build an economic China. So the third nation building is to build a legal China, a rule of law China. And Xi Jinping make rule of law as one of his very important, you know, policies. This is something we must achieve. To be or not to be, this is not a question. Very different results. I think we can not afford another failure. We must succeed, and we can succeed. Thank you very much.
Oh, would you like to stay there or come back and have a seat? It's your choice.
I can stand.
Stay there. Okay. With that, so why don't I begin the questions? And I guess one that has just been in the news is whether or not, and something that you commented on earlier, is whether or not the so-called, those advocating independence or right of self-determination in Hong Kong would be subject to criminal penalties. This had come up in 2003 in the context of Article 23 when some people had asked, do those laws, the older laws, still stay in force given there's so many common law cases elsewhere that are contradictory and hard to assess? What is your view on whether calls for self-determination or independence violate or not the current criminal laws of Hong Kong? Mr. Fong, did you want to do an official translation? Let's get the microphone here, please, for Mr. Fong, for that question, please.
王部长您好，首先我想问第一个问题，就是关于在香港如果有人宣扬独立或者说是自决的话，这是否是应该受到刑事条例的惩处？相类似的这个问题呢，在过去也曾经讨论过，就香港所实行的这个普通法体系的问题呢，人们有这种相关的争论，所以我的问题就是您对这样的一个情况如何看？您觉得如果有人宣扬在香港宣扬独立或者是自决的话，是否是应该受到这个刑事的这个惩处？
Okay, thank you for your question. Firstly, I shall say, you know, freedom of speech is fully protected by the basic law and also Chinese constitution. Today, the freedom of speech is enlarged a lot. It is a fact. However, in any countries, any places, there should be some reasonable limitations. I would suggest the audience to read the 1999 judgment by the Court of Final Appeal on the case national flag case. On that judgment, the Court of Final Appeal very clearly, you know, set up the limitation on freedom of expression. So you cannot exceed the limitation. Otherwise, that's crime. Also recently, I read a case made by the U.S. Federal Circuit Court. 2013, there was a case, a person translated holy war materials by ISIS into English and put it online for people to read. And this person was punished by the U.S. Circuit Court, 17 years, 6 months in prison. So just translation of holy war materials into English language and put it online. And the Supreme Court of U.S. rejected the appeal. So the court is very clear, says, you know, if we cannot afford the consequence of your language, if your language is realized, but the consequence we cannot afford, so the court will stop the language, the speech without any hesitation, because we cannot afford the consequence. I think the obviously, you know, such kind of speech, you know, language, they break the basic law. I don't know whether you pay attention. One item of their charter is to abolish the basic law, to make Hong Kong constitution. So what does that mean? To abolish Hong Kong basic law, that means to abolish all the governmental institutions, including the executive, the legislative, the judicial organs, and everything, you know, from the basic law. So that what does that mean? So we cannot afford, people said that they cannot achieve. But even in the efforts, I don't believe they can achieve Hong Kong independence. You know, I also, you know, I agree they cannot achieve. But in the process to making efforts to achieve, you know, Hong Kong independence, they will cause a lot of conflict, a lot of social instability. Even, you know, according to Hong Kong local law, the crimes ordinance and the society's ordinance, it is still, you know, the law enforcing Hong Kong. And this law was made by the British government long time ago. And it has been applied in 1946 and the 1950s, 1960s. It's still the law in Hong Kong. I call the audience and the journalists to carefully read the Hong Kong laws, you know, they enforce, still enforce today. We cannot say, you know, this law is too old. So it's out of date.
but you don't have new laws. You don't have new laws. So in 2003, Hong Kong tried to make a new laws, the national security law. Actually, that will give more, you know, space. But Hong Kong did not succeed. Did not succeed. So it is still the law. So I think, what is the rule of law? Rule of law is, means rule of the existing laws, including the existing ordinance, existing judgments. So we have to follow these existing laws and the judgments. So that's common law tradition. And every people should be equal before the law. So it doesn't matter what's the purpose. You know, we cannot say, you know, he is an advocate, you know, independence, you know, for a political purpose. So we cannot punish. Just like, you know, we for democracy, can you robbery of people? I think that's very clear.
Yeah, and one more question, then we'll go to our audience. But the original comment that caught everybody's attention was you're saying it's not legal for mainland agencies to kidnap anybody from Hong Kong. That is a violation of one country, two systems. Would you please elaborate? Because I think that's been a subject of tremendous concern to the people of Hong Kong. Why do you think that is not legal?
我还有一个问题， 就是您之前呢曾经也做过如下的表态， 这也引起了很多人的关注， 就是您曾经说过， 内地机构如果在香港绑架港人回内地的话呢， 这是非法的， 这也是违背了一国两制。 那么现在想， 请问您是否可以更多的来谈一谈， 就这个议题， 因为这个议题呢， 我相信在香港也引发了非常多的关注。
To be honest, I don't know the facts, you know, all facts like you. That's very unfortunate, you know, incident. No one wants to see such kind of case happen here in Hong Kong. And no one wants to see it happens again in future. I'm happy that Mr. Li Bo returned to Hong Kong and return to his normal life as a lawyer. Just one point I would like to emphasize. According to the basic law, only, it should be very clear, only Hong Kong SAR government agencies can enforce law within the legal jurisdiction of Hong Kong. Only Hong Kong law enforcement agencies can enforce law in Hong Kong. This is very clear. This is, you know, protected by the basic law and one country, two systems. China will continue to uphold one country, two systems policy, uphold the basic law, rule of law principle in handling cross-border issues, honor our commitments to the Hong Kong society. This is now changed. This is very clear. On the other hand, I want to say, you know, any people outside mainland China should also respect Chinese constitution and the Chinese laws. Should encourage China to build rule of law. The government also needs encouragement. If every day, you know, we always criticize the government like people, the government like people. So on the one hand, we should criticize. On the other hand, we should also encourage the government to do right things, good things. So I hope, you know, any people outside mainland China, China's jurisdiction should also respect Chinese constitution and Chinese law. Shouldn't do anything harmful to Chinese national security and the interests of the entire Chinese people, including our Hong Kong residents.
Yes, thank you. Okay. Thank you. We're running over time. Normally we end at 2, but Dr. Wong has kindly agreed to stay on a little longer. Please identify yourselves with your name and news organization. Frank first.
Hi. Professor Wong, thank you so much for your two-part presentation. The first part was about rule of law in China, and I'd like to ask you, isn't it ironic that you say the Communist Party is implementing rule of law in China. And when the party puts itself above the law, above the constitution, and in the current anti-corruption campaign, for instance, it's been carried out by the party and not by the government. And you say that China is a normal country, and yet what normal country would do that? Would have the party run things rather than the government run things. And in China, the military, the People's Liberation Army, belongs to the party, doesn't belong to the government. What normal country has that? Is China really a normal country, as you claim it to be? Is it because it has 1.4 billion people? If the U.S. had more people, you think the U.S. would put the Republican Party in charge of the military instead of the government? And then the second part of your talk, of course, has to do with one country, two systems. And we've been talking about the Li Bo case. Can you illustrate how the basic law has been, as you put it, fully implemented by China by citing the basic law, by citing the Li Bo case?
Could you identify your media affiliation?
Sure. My name is Frank Cheng. I freelance.
Okay. 我是一位这个自由记者。那么我的问题呢，就是关于您刚才的这个演讲呢，是两个部分。第一个部分呢，谈到了在中国的这个法治建设。那么我认为呢，现在在中国呢，是党领导一切的。那么党呢，是共产党是置于宪法和法律之上的。比如说，在现在所进行的这个反腐的这个行动呢，就是由党来领导，而不是由政府来主导的。所以王部长，您刚才说中国是一个正常国家，但我并不觉得正常国家应该是这样。那么，包括中国的军队现在也是听党指挥，而不是说听中国政府指挥。而我们看到，在美国就不是这样。所以，这是关于您的前半部分的这个演讲。后半部分，您谈到了就是在这个香港的情况。那么，我的问题就是，那么考虑到李波案件的这个发生，那么您认为？如果就这个案件来看，如何显示出这个基本法是被全面执行了呢？
Thank you, Frank. Old friends. I think we discussed the first question many times, long time ago. You know, there is a saying, every person is an exception. Not even the twins.You can find the distinction. Every country is an exception. You cannot copy this country to another. No, you know, some system may be, you know, work very well in one country, but other countries may totally doesn't work. So we see the American style democracies works very well in the US. Even today,recently, Professor Larry Diamond in Hong Kong said it's a failure. And the promotion of American-style democracy in other countries also a failure, especially in the Middle East, caused so many refugees. I think China, the political constitutional system, is just the outcome of the historical development.So we cannot choose the history. It's a reality. So the CPC leadership, before, you know, they ran the country without a law. Without a law, they will still run the country. Today, they want to employ legal mechanism, legal means to run the country. So what do we choose? Do you choose management without a law?Like in many years, there was no law. In many areas, no laws. Or today, the CPC is determined to build the rule of law in China. So
that was my question. Is China a normal country? What other country is like that? You say China is a normal country.
As I said, the normal country means every country has its good things, also has its own...special situations. So that's normal. Like the U.S. The U.S. has good things. I studied in the U.S. I saw that your constitution is really a miracle. It's very good. But U.S. also has, you know, very bad things. This is normal.
So you don't expect China is, everything is perfect. We never expect that. But you cannot say your China, everything is bad. Everything is bad. So as long as I like the saying by Deng Xiaoping, yeah, it doesn't matter whether a cat is black and white, as long as it catches mice. It doesn't matter what kind of political system a country has, as long as it settles the questions of the particular country. It can serve the people. This is a good system, as long as it can solve the problems of the country. So the Communist Party, you know, manages the country, so many people get rid of poverty. Several hundred million people, you know, now have food, have clothes. 40 years ago, you know, everything was not that. So I think the Communist Party tried to combine rule of the party, the leadership of the party, rule of law, and also rule of the people together. Party leadership, democracy, and the rule of law combined together. This is an experiment. Experiment. You know, no, as I said, no country like that. But China, I think we should try. We should try to build, you know, how to combine party leadership, rule of law, and the rule of the people together. I think this is the best, you know, path for China to pursue.
Okay.
The second question, I don't know we have time. Actually, I...
Yes, well, yeah. Please do answer the second question, yes.
Yeah.
We've gone over the time that he said he had to leave, but we would please do answer the second question, yeah, because your remarks at the start filled up more of the time than we expected.
Yeah. And the question, how to fully implement the basic law, I think there are two ends. From the Hong Kong side, Hong Kong, the end of Hong Kong, this is from Hong Kong, you know, I think we, like the mainland, the central authorities, we cannot choose some articles of the basic law to implement and ignore other articles. For example, the discussion about the relationship between one country and two systems. It is seemingly, you know, some people in Hong Kong emphasize two systems. Yeah, the clause, the articles about two systems are fully implemented. For the one country, you know, we ignore. We just pretend we don't know. We don't know one country. No articles in the basic law about one country. I think that's not the truth.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for speaking. Normally, we always cut these things off at 2 o'clock sharp, but because his initial remarks went on so long, we have extended an extra quarter of an hour, but I am getting a signal that we have to stop. So thank you very much, Dr. Wong. We appreciate your coming to speak here. Let me... We always give the visitors to the club something to remember the club by, and we hope you'll wear your club tie at some point as a symbol of the freedom of the press.
Thank you.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you all, and I hope we'll see you at some of our upcoming events, as I'd already mentioned. Thank you.